We'll start with the economics version of an alpine run. I'm David Brancaccio. Let's connect to the Swiss ski resort of Davos, home of the World Economic Forum, the yearly gathering of heads of state and business elite. President Trump is there, even as his Senate impeachment trial goes on in Washington. The Economist magazine's Patrick Fowles, a familiar voice on this program, is covering Davos.
Greetings from the snow-capped mountains.
Now, going into this conference, a key focus was going to be governments and companies addressing climate change and investors applying environmental, social, and governance standards to investments. Is that, Patrick, a dominant theme, or have trade tensions eclipsed that?
There are two big themes. One is actually climate change. The Europeans, the Asians are beginning to envision a world where companies and investors do more to decarbonize the economy. American firms and investors are a bit more hesitant on that. I think the second thing that is a theme is almost the Trumpification of trade policy around the world. So other countries beginning to mimic the relatively assertive policies of the U.S. in several different ways. And that's very clear, too.
President Trump was on U.S. television today, did an interview, and suggested strongly that the U.S. feels Europe has done us wrong on trade, and that now that phase one with China is signed, he's going to focus his attention toward Europe. Is Europe ready for this?
Well, I think what's happening behind the scenes is a big argument over digital taxes. So France has announced it wants to impose taxes on big tech companies. Other countries in Europe would like to do so too, and the U.S. and the Treasury Department and others are pretty angry about this. If they manage to resolve that, I wonder if relations might remain reasonably calm, and that's because it's an election year, and as the China Phase One deal showed us, President Trump is keen to avoid a big sort of trade upset that derails the economy.
The Economist magazine's business affairs editor, Patrick Fowles, in Davos, Switzerland. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Now, here's a number. Democratic presidential candidate Michael Bloomberg has spent more than $200 million on advertising in just 8 weeks. The price of political ads has gone up an average 20% across many platforms. Other candidates may have to adjust. Here's Marketplace's Kristen Schwab.
TV is still the leader in the political advertising market. And like any market, there's supply and demand. Steve Passwader is vice president of Kantar Media.
There's only so much inventory, right?
Then you narrow it down to prime inventory.
You know, once you get into those programs that everybody likes, you know, it starts to get pretty prohibitive.
Bloomberg is still introducing himself to voters. Older voters are more likely to vote in primaries and are more likely to watch TV. His focus on TV could push other candidates to spend more of their ad dollars online, says Michael Franz, co-director of the Wesleyan Media Project.
There are also more places to go for a campaign that is strategically trying to target.
Bloomberg says even if he doesn't win the primaries, he'll continue running ads against Trump. And Franz says that could inflate the price of ads even more because Bloomberg will be paying more. He won't get the lower market rates reserved for candidates. And that wouldn't just raise prices for politicians, but for any company looking for airtime. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
Markets, the FTSE index in London is unchanged at the moment. The S&P future here up 0.4%. The NASDAQ future up 0.7%. After a pause of more than two decades, the federal government is set to start funding research on gun violence. The Centers for Disease Control and the National Institutes of Health will split $25 million. Democrats in Congress had pushed for double that. But as Lisa Hagen from the Public Radio Reporting Collaborative, Guns and America, reports, it's still a major policy shift.
In the early 1990s, a study out of Emory University found that guns in the home increase the risk of homicide. Shortly after that, the National Rifle Association started lobbying to shut down the CDC department that had funded the study. Arkansas Congressman Jay Dickey then wrote language into a spending bill saying researchers can't use federal money to advocate for gun control. The CDC continued pursuing gun research for about 3 years, but many researchers were wary of running afoul of some members of Congress. That's according to Mark Rosenberg, who headed the CDC's Injury Prevention Center at the time.
It scared a lot of people away from doing research in that area.
Most federally funded gun violence research slowed to a trickle. For the last 20 years, researchers like Daniel Webster have had to stitch together resources from state and private funders. He studies gun policy at Johns Hopkins. Webster says a lot of recent gun violence research has relied on data that's already available because it's cheaper.
The more expensive and time-consuming work of gathering new data, that is why it's particularly important to have federal funding.
In 2018, the mood in Congress started to shift just after the high school shooting in Parkland, Florida. Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar told members of Congress that the Dickey Amendment doesn't prohibit funding gun research.
My understanding is that the rider does not in any way impede our ability to conduct our research mission,
so
but it's simply about
will
advocacy.
Will you proactively speak out now knowing we've had our 18th school shooting?
That was Florida Congresswoman Kathy Castor pressing Azar. He told her his agencies would pursue the research. Fast forward to late 2019, President Trump signed the spending bills into law to make that happen. The federal grant process is in its earliest stages, so no research has been funded yet. But Webster says the federal money could lead to in-depth surveys over long periods across wide swaths of the country. In Atlanta, I'm Lisa Hagan for Marketplace.
Also, monitor interest rates here. The 10-year benchmark interest rate up this morning, 1.78%. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. We are from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.